Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to be talking about the Kingdom of God, which is just simply a government that rules over you in your heart and your mind by God. And it's a way in which to govern yourselves in the world, but not of the world. Therefore, it will set you free. And the truth about such a government is right in the Bible, but you would think it was hidden under a pile of rubble. And that rubble is modern theology, and it's not just excluded to the modern theologians. The Pharisees had the same problem, as well as many people throughout history. There, when they went to rebuild the temple, they were going to build the temple according to the ancient ways. Instead, decided to build an actual building and a construction and a government and all this kind of stuff that would exercise authority. And the old men wept when they saw that what the people were going to do. I've heard ministers tell me they wept with joy, but they actually just wept because people would not see the way the ways of the ancients. The truth is, people cannot see the ways of the ancients because there is a collective unconsciousness in the people. They simply have a mind block. And that comes from a lot of different things. One of the things it comes from is a kind of an element of narcissism, which egotisticalism, or whatever you want to call it, egoism. And they don't want to believe that they might have it wrong. And some people might think I'm a little narcissistic because of the fact that I always think I'm right, but I didn't always think I was right. I had to change what I thought because I realized it was wrong. I was taught all the things that you were taught, and I realized I was wrong. And I was willing to admit that I was wrong and that my teachers had deceived me. They had been deceived themselves. It wasn't necessarily that they intended to deceive me, but they didn't intend to see the truth. They intended to see the convenient truth. And that is not the same as the truth. The convenient truth is what you're willing to see. And you need to be willing to see the whole truth and provide for it. And that, of course, is what Christ was coming to tell us. That's what people like Patrick Henry said, you know, as for me, I want to see the whole truth and provide for it. He actually was against the Constitution. He said it was written as if good men would take office. When bad men take office, they will steal your rights through ambuscade. Most people don't realize it, that their rights are gone. Most of their rights are not accessible. They may still exist, but they exist in the hands of others. You've lost the liberty of choice. And I gave an example in this morning's two programs, dealing with someone's book that actually sounded kind of good when you start looking at the title and some of the things. You know, he talks about human rights versus legal rights, why the church must be separate from the state. And but his term, the state there, is a small s state rather than a capital S state. A capital S state is like a corporate state, you know, an actual governmental body that holds something in trust and it gives it authority. What they hold is your right to choose, what the Greeks called exousia. And they hold your right to choose and they choose for you. They choose how much you're going to give to the government, how you're going to serve the government. You know, they can draft you. They can draft your daughters, actually, if they want. And they can draft your stuff. They can take your stuff. They can actually, if you have a passport, you have agreed to the fact that the government can compel you to work at civilian work projects. And literally without pay. And of course, you wouldn't believe this if I just told you flat out. Every U.S. citizen who is employed works for the government without pay. They already do that. They don't think of it in those terms. They think, well, I know I pay income tax. But income tax is directly determined by what you should have received for your labor. You do $100 worth of work, you should get $100. Because you gave them $100 of your sweat and blood and time and life. Time is money. You gave that time, and you should get $100. Except you've already made other agreements that the government can take 10, 20, 30, 40, 50% of what you produce. So the first few hours that you work, maybe the first half day that you work, depending on what you're making, goes to the government. And you don't get a dime of it. It goes to them. You're working for them. And that's what's happened. I always remember the Abbott Costello routine when he's talking to the cop and he does this whole routine about, you're working for me. Go get me a drink of water. And, of course, the guy doesn't do it. It's funny when Abbott Costello does it. But the reality is you're working for them. And you're the them that you're working for is the state, capital S-T-A-T-E, whatever it is, you know, Canadian state, U.S. state, whatever. They all collect a portion of your labor, and you work for nothing. You work for free. And supposedly, you have a right to benefits. And, you know, they do give out an awful lot of benefits. Unfortunately, they're in most every country is already to the state where they're borrowing all the money to provide the benefits because they've overspent. They haven't been keeping the Sabbath. They didn't work and earn it and then share it. They borrowed against the future, and now they have to work even on the Sabbath because they're not Sabbath keepers. Everybody counting days and saying, I'm going to take this day off. If you're in debt, you're not a Sabbath keeper. I said that this morning, and I still say that because the Sabbath is about debt. It's about not going into debt. It's about working first and taking the rest you've earned. It's not taking, you know, being lazy and slothful and then having to pay back what you failed to earn. And that's what everybody has done. They have coveted their neighbor's goods and they've become merchandise and they've cursed their children with this debt. So anyway, this guy was talking about human rights versus legal rights, and he really should be using the term natural rights for what he's trying to say, but he wants to use human rights, so go ahead and use it. And he had all these different precepts, and we talked about them this morning. And I had only read the first two, and I thought, well, heck, I could do a program on this. This guy's got some good ideas. But I didn't read the rest. I was going to read them, you know, right before I do the program so they're fresh in my mind, and if I get the time, or just read them right when I do the program. Well, I read them before I did the program, and I realized after one and two, the guy didn't know what he was talking about. He was all over the board, and he believes that his plan is scriptural, and we went through why it's not scriptural. What he was doing is trying to create a closed economy where people wouldn't have to pay taxes, and they would be separate from the government, separate from the state, and they would be a part of the church, and he simply is wrong in his conclusions. One place he said that, you know, supposed to sell all we have and give to the poor because Jesus said so. Well, actually, he didn't tell everybody to sell all they had and give to the poor. He said that to his disciples. His disciple is students. They're studying to take an office, and later on he appoints them to that office, which is the church. He is training up the people to take the place of the Levites. Because remember, he was going to take the kingdom away from those who sat in the seats of Moses. And he was going to appoint it to those who would bear fruit. And we see Levites who had become corrupted by, you know, some of the Hasmonean doctrines and other things that were going on at the time. And realized, no, we should be doing what Christ said. And he sold the property he wasn't supposed to own as a Levite. Levites don't own property in their own name. They couldn't sell the property. If they did, any Levite could come and redeem it back because he didn't have a lawful title, because he did not have an inheritance in the land. I don't know how many times and how many different ways I've explained this, but most people just zooms right over their head. And, you know, and people go to the website and they read a little part of that and they say, oh, your website is so confusing. I don't know what you're talking about. That's because you don't know the truth. And that's why we have hundreds of footnotes, all kinds of links to other articles, so that you understand why I say the Levites could not own property as a personal estate. They could not do that according to the rules set down by God through Moses. According to Jesus, his disciples, studying to be the new ministers of his kingdom, could not own property as a personal estate. And he says that right in the Greek text. But they don't translate it that way. They say, sell all you have. Well, that means you can't. Actually, the word there, hath, is the word for property. Sell all your property. Couldn't have real property. Because that's not what they're. If they can get wealthy, they will in that position. And Jesus didn't want men who were seeking wealth. He wanted men who were seeking service. All the high priests and priests of Israel, you know, at least when they get into the upper echelons, were wealthy. Lived in opulent castles, you know, like the $10 million estate that some of your preachers live in. And they were good at tickling the ears and telling people that they're the children of God and they are special and they're saved and all this kind of stuff and they have Moses. But Jesus said, no, they didn't have Moses and they didn't know the gospel. They didn't know the message of Moses and they were actually workers of iniquity. And the funny thing is they were doing all the things you're doing as modern Christians. So, whoa. You know, so anyway, eventually the guy gets down to his third item, which is he's creating these monetary exchanges, and we point out that they could get him arrested and everybody who tries that arrested, and I know people who've gotten arrested doing that. But, you know, I was conversing back and forth with this guy a number of times, but I couldn't get him to lay out what his plan was without buying his book. I always had to buy his book. Well, you should buy my book. Well, I don't want to buy his book. It's another 400-page book that's full of nonsense. What I was willing to do is give him the experience of, you know, 6 decades of study and what I have seen and written and explained on the website for free. You don't have to buy my book to read it. My books are free online because I'm a minister of Christ. Freely receive, freely give. But anyway, he would not read the articles I shared. When he'd say something, I'd say, well, you know, that's not really true. Here's an article. I'd say it's not really true because this and this, but read an article here that's more in depth with footnotes and links to show you why that's not true. He says, I will not read your articles. I don't want to read any of your articles. I already know what's true. And everybody was, when he finally put this out, there was quite a few people on the website that realized that what he was doing was wrong, was incorrect. And I showed this morning in great detail that his closed society was really doing, he was really doing, to a greater degree, he was doing what Aaron and the Israelites did that was wrong when they built the golden calf. They were creating a closed society. First time that you see in the Bible where they're talking about gates to the camp, gates where you can't, you have to come through to the gates. What it was, it's the walled-in camp. And the walls weren't built just to keep people out, but to keep them in. Their wealth was now in the golden calf. If they fled in the face of an enemy or whatever, they couldn't take their gold with them. It was in this common purse, this one purse, which is forbidden in the Bible over and over again in many different ways. But that's what they were doing. Moses wanted you to keep your money in your pocket. But he also wanted your money to be just weights and measures, not script and exchange papers and stock and corporation where somebody's controlling the corporation. He imagines that all this is going to be so simple and everything. He doesn't understand human nature, but he doesn't really want to see it. And so anyway, you can go to our one website preparing you and you look up Golden Calf. You could probably find it at hisholychurch.org as well. But we got lots of articles about the Golden Calf and what they were really doing. We got articles about altars, what the altars really were, which were actually institutions. And the stones were actually people. And when they gather their tents and their altars of clay and altars of stone are actually showing you the structure of a system of self-government where nobody exercises authority one over the other, in the compelling of contributions. Of course, that's only going to work if people actually choose to contribute, because societies always have to have some sort of system of social welfare, because people get hurt, people get sick, people drop dead, children will starve if somebody isn't there to help them. Mostly the family is there to take people out, but occasionally families break down, war, pestilence, whatever, and you have to have help. But you want to have a help that strengthens the poor, not weakens the poor. Go to Detroit, go to Baltimore, you can find the welfare that weakens the poor. You go to Sodom and Gomorrah, you find the welfare that weakens the poor. That was the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah, by the way. It doesn't list off sodomy as the sin. Sodomy is the symptom of the sin. The sin was, in a time of affluence, they did not strengthen the poor. They actually made the people more self-indulgent, because they didn't understand God's government, and they didn't want to go the way of God's government. We show you how that looks and how that works. And we are willing to look at all sorts of information that people apply or suggest is true and measure it in great detail to what is actually said and what was actually done and what was actually meant. And even if we're wrong, we want to hear from you if you think that we're wrong, so that you can, that we will know. We don't want to go the wrong way. We want to go the right way. And if you see something we don't see, let us know and we'll look at it. We're absolutely willing to. But the guy who's not willing to look at what anybody has to offer him at all. I mean, I don't want to have to read a 400-page book, but you should be able to give me a synopsis. In his synopsis, which was, you know, it was what it was, whatever, we could see right away after the first two items, which were great suggestions, to some degree. There's some flaws in those even, but I'm just being overly critical. But the reality is he had the basics down. But then after that, creating this currency exchange, I can name you people in jail for that. And not just in America. This is true in most countries. You can't do that without getting, and you certainly can't do it to evade taxes. And you should not. And now, I don't know how he's going to receive the first 2 hours that we've already done on this, but I have a couple of choices here. I could talk about Bart Ehrman, who's a great scholar, who's done a lot of research in looking into the discrepancy in the different manuscripts. There's over 57,000 manuscripts, or parts of manuscripts, of the Testaments. And there's a lot of differences, because if you only took the first major 100 back in the 1700s that we have, you could find over 30,000 differences. Now, many of those differences are minor little errors of missing a letter here or there, but some of them are actually rather significant. You know, whole stories missing from earlier texts that we find in later texts. We don't know how they got there. We don't know where they came from, but everybody quotes them. And so he's done a pretty thorough study of this. I don't think everything he says is right by any means, but he's just reporting the facts. He's looked at, you know, hundreds and hundreds of these manuscripts and read books by people who have looked at hundreds and hundreds, and he's put it together that there's a problem with the way we look at the Gospels and even the epistles, because we don't recognize, or we don't know, we just haven't been informed at the differences. You can take the King James Bible and you can find at least omission discrepancies, but you can actually find where somebody is saying this is what happened, and that's the other guy says something else happened. Are they major? Well, it's significant whenever you find that, because the question is, how did they get changed? How did this come about, the altar? I think the basic information you need is there, but I think most people miss it because they're not going by divine inspiration. They're going by their own imagination and their private interpretation of a lot of guys who study. And I think Ehrman makes mistakes. He doesn't know it all by any means. And I could debate that with him if we wanted to talk about that. And I might learn something from him, and he might learn something from me. But we're not going to talk about him. And so I also could start talking about somebody who talks about hyper-normalization, this whole idea of how society is moving along and changing and altering, but not changing. How history is repeating itself through our changes. How we are going down pathways in society that are bringing us to destruction. We could talk about that. That would be a great thing to talk about. And the collective unconsciousness. What the heck is that all about? Because that's, Max Planck once said, science cannot solve the ultimate mysteries of nature. And that is because, in the last analysis, we ourselves are part of the mystery that we are trying to solve. It is not the possession of truth, but the success which attends the seeking after it that enriches the seeker and brings happiness to him. Now, as far as not seeing the mystery because we're a part of it, we're too close to the trees to see the forest. We have to step back. We have to be still. We have to see with other eyes that we have no control over. We can't decide what is right and wrong. We can't decide what is good and evil of our own power because we just can't step back far enough to get the big picture. That's where we got into trouble. We tried to decide. We ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But through revelation, we can know what is right and wrong. So how do you plug into revelation? Well, be still and know. Be humble of heart. Be willing to see that you're wrong. But that's not what we're going to talk about either. So we're halfway through the show and I haven't got to what we're talking about. We are going to talk about narcissistic personality disorder. Because everybody is suffering from that to one degree or another. Some places it's not that big a deal. It's egotism. Narcissist is, the old Greek story about the guy who fell in love with his own reflection, and that's narcissism, where you're just all caught up with you. It's all about you, You're so vain, you probably think this show is about you, right? Well, maybe it is about you. And maybe it's about me. Maybe I'm narcissistic. I have some of the symptoms, or at least you could imagine them to be the symptoms. Because I do think I'm right, but I haven't always thought I was right. I was willing to think I was wrong. And that's how I got to, as soon as somebody can show me that I'm wrong about what I'm saying, if I don't want to change, even after you show me where I'm wrong, well, then I may be narcissistic. But if I change, if I say, you're right, you've got a great point there, then I'm not narcissistic. That doesn't meet the criteria. A narcissist isn't going to admit that he's wrong. Nobody understands him. That's why they think he's wrong. They just don't know. Poor devils. Poor, poor dears. But anyway, this narcissistic personality disorder, which is a big, long, fancy term, is one of several types of personality disorders. At least they used to be called disorders. Now they're called life choices. the whole gender thing. Personality disorders are conditions in which people have traits that cause them to feel and behave in socially distressing ways, limiting their ability to function in relationships and other areas of their life, such as work or school or, love relationships. A woman doesn't like men anymore. She only likes other women. Or a man doesn't like women anymore. He only likes other men. That's a disorder. Because the function of man and woman is procreation. As far as sexual function, that's the purpose. That's why it's there. It may provide pleasure, but it is there for reproduction of the species. Every amoeba can tell you that. That's just nature. But people have perverted the natural use, and now they say, well, I'm a man who wants to be a woman. And they are confused. That is the condition of a disorder, but it's not politically correct to call it a disorder anymore. But guess what? I'm calling it one. If you have a narcissistic personality disorder, you may come across as conceited, boastful, pretentious. You often monopolize conversations. I can monopolize a conversation if I want to get my point apart. But I can sit there and listen for an awful long time. You'd be surprised. You may belittle or look down on people you perceive as inferior. I don't necessarily perceive people as inferior, but I do occasionally perceive people as foolish. And that's absolutely reasonable. But I don't do it to put them down. I do it so that they can see. You know, everything I'm teaching people is so that they can see their error. I see them moving like a freight train towards a burnt-out trestle. I don't want them to crash and burn. You know, I mean, people, this whole transgender thing, people say, oh, look at the suicide rate amongst transgenders. That's because everybody is so judgmental and offensive and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, you go to a country that is absolutely not judgmental and offensive. Well, let them have their operations. Let them have, you know, anything they want. And they totally pride themselves on not persecuting these people. And when they first finally get the operation that supposedly makes everything right, then they commit suicide. Because they got nobody else to blame it on. The suicide rate is just as high there. So it isn't the fact that people give them a hard time. Is the fact that they have a disorder. Now, we're not going to do the show on why they have this disorder, but I can show you why they have this disorder. And if any of them want to call me, we can talk about it. And I can help them overcome the disorder. If they really want to. If they want to be healed. I'm going to be in Idaho next week. Maybe there's some up there that need help. Well, come look me up. Anyway, so you may feel this sense of entitlement is another characteristic of somebody who is narcissistic. This is what we see out there on the street. And when you don't receive special treatment, you may become impatient or angry. You may insist on having the best of everything. For instance, the best car, the athletic club, the medical care. And so therefore you're going to want to tax the rich and take from them because you're so important. This is what you're seeing, this liberal social justice cry coming from people who get all angry and want to go out and punch a Nazi, which is a Nazi thing to do. They have a disorder. They're narcissistic. We are creating a narcissistic society. And it's bred by narcissists. I mean, a lot of people become teachers, believe it or not. I'm not saying all. They want to lump everybody into this group. Because they can't handle real adults, but they can handle little kids. Little kids will make them feel like an adult because they're surrounded by little kids. And they can tell them to sit down and shut up, and they can control them and manipulate them and tell them they don't know what they're talking about. Then they're not going to get a big argument because they're children. It's a vanity thing. It makes them feel like an adult. Now, that's a real thing that goes on in schools today. It's not everywhere, but narcissism is just about everywhere to one degree or another. At the same time, you have trouble handling anything that might be perceived as a criticism. Narcissists don't like criticism. They're easily offended. You know, that you know they got to have special pronouns, or they got to have, you know, you got, you know, don't tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. Buy my book. Because I can't explain it to you because you're so stupid and inferior to my brilliant mind. I think everybody can understand the kingdom. I will admit that knowing all the stuff that I know about some things, law and all this stuff, I can remember pages from books I read 30, 40 years ago. And I know a lot of people have better minds than I do, but when it comes to preaching the kingdom, I know a lot of stuff. I've spent a lifetime learning it. But I'm willing to listen to other people. I'm willing to take the time to show you what I've seen, where it disagrees with what you think you know. And I'm willing to listen to what you think you know. And I will do debates with people if they want. I will talk to them till 3 o'clock in the morning if that's what it takes, but I'm doing it to help you. not to put you down. I admit, it is very easy to be deceived in this world today. And everybody's going to get a chance to repent of that deception. Well, most everybody. Somebody just died in the last 20 minutes. Well, they're not going to get a chance again, but I think everybody gets an opportunity to start to look at the truth about life, about themselves, whatever. Okay, to feel better, you may react as a narcissist with rage or contempt and try to belittle the other people to make yourself appear superior, or may feel depressed and moody because you fall short of perfection. You know, most of the people I know that have trouble with depression and being moody, I mean, there's a number of different things that can cause that, but a great deal of the cure is to start thinking about other people as much as you think about yourself, which is the reverse of narcissism. You have to love your neighbor as yourself. That a narcissist doesn't do. He loves himself more. And so that's very important, that you move away from this narcissistic approach of you're more important than other people. And one of the ways to do that and practice that and test that in yourself is to serve the needs of other people, help other people. But then when you get really good at helping other people, you also want to help them in a way, again, that strengthens the poor. So this is all part of the deal. Well, we're gonna take a little break, and we'll be back, and we'll look at the DSM-5 criteria for a narcissistic personality disorder and the features that would and symptoms that would include. Okay, well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. And as I said, I would talk a little bit about some of the symptoms of this disorder we call narcissism. And it's, you know, I mean, all these things we can find in lists of vices and virtues. I mean, basically a narcissist is putting himself before other people. He will put other people down before he will admit that he's wrong. He thinks he's important. He thinks that if there's something special, he should get it. He has a sense of entitlement. All this is just selfishness. We don't have to add the word selfishness disorder. That's what you could call it. And what it is not walking orderly with God. And seeking the kingdom of God is walking orderly with God. And God is a very sacrificing God. He gives you life. He gives you choice. He gives you a place to exercise that choice. He gives woman to man and man to woman so they can reproduce. Everybody says, if God was so all-powerful, how does he lets evil take place in the world? How come you let evil take place in the world? How come you're instrumental in the creation of evil in the world? Most of the evil, I mean, recently we've seen somebody supposedly killed 50-some-odd people in Las Vegas. And shot them from high up in a building or something, which is very possible that that's actually what took place. I see all kinds of stuff, people talking about a second shooter, which appears to be a strobe light and evidently was discovered as a strobe light while they were trying to find the shooter. And but people will think that there were two shooters. And the reality is somebody could do that. Somebody maybe did have help. I don't know, but somebody could fire a gun and cause that much damage to a crowd full of people with no place to go and no cover, firing down on them for 5-10 minutes. You could send a lot of bullets flying that way, and those bullets would do a lot of damage. You don't even have to aim it. You're just firing away. And it doesn't have any, because there's a crowd. So that's a terrible, terrible thing. But he doesn't hold it. I mean, that happens every month in Chicago. I mean, the, last September, 57 people were killed in Chicago, and over 258 were wounded. That's just in Chicago. That's some of the strictest gun control laws in the United States. So it doesn't have anything to do with the guns. I mean, obviously, we don't want crazy men having the guns. It has to do with the fact that we don't care about our neighbor as much as we care about ourselves. People didn't see this coming. People didn't, you know, I mean, the guy was on, evidently on psychotropic drugs. And almost every shooter that gets up there and does this and then shoots himself, they're on psychotropic drugs. So if you really want to control this, let's control the drugs. Why are people on psychotropic drugs? Because they've got all kinds of problems. And why do they have all kinds of problems? Is because they need help. And why aren't they getting help, the kind of help that they need? It's because we don't know what they need. We don't know what we need. And seeking the kingdom of God is seeking what you need. You need the truth. You need the truth about yourself. You need to get out of this stream of collective unconsciousness and start waking up to what's really going on, what's really driving society. So anyway, some of those features or symptoms that you would find in the DSM-5, now, some people might want to know what the DSM is. It's a Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders, and they just call it DSM-5 because it's the fifth one. So, anyway, I've done shows about the guys who wrote DSM-4 and the guys who wrote the new one, and there's some serious problems with the new one. And not that there wasn't a problem with the old one, but serious, I mean, there are more and more problems growing in these manuals all the time. Because more and more people are becoming, actually people who have disorders, or they no longer calling it a disorder, but people who don't really have a disorder are now being called somebody with a disorder. I mean, like they believe that it is, you have a mental problem if you think you need to own a gun. Yet, we know historically, that most of the people that have been killed with guns have been killed at the hands of guns and the hands of government. That's just the way it works. And, of course, they haven't been all killed with guns. I mean, government has killed with bombs and food shortages and Agent Orange killed millions of people. Millions of people. All these different ways. That, millions and millions of people. You know, 60 million people in China put to death, starved to death, killed by governments against a virtually unarmed population. And the fact is, yeah, the governments today have things like drones and tanks and all that kind of stuff. But the American people in private ownership have over 300 million guns. That's a lot of guns. And the fact is that keeps America, and it keeps the government of America a little bit on their toes. Unfortunately, we're being eaten out from the inside because we are slothful in the ways of God. And we need to go back to the ways of God. And narcissism is blocking the road. So here are some of the features that are listed in the manual. Having an exaggerated sense of self-importance. You mean like a football player at the NFL. Somebody said, someone had a t-shirt, an old lady had a t-shirt that said, if Korea bombs us, we should send in the NFL, which I thought was funny. It's kind of a chuckle, and I don't want to pick on the NFL, but I myself will never go to another NFL game ever again. Why? Because I never go to NFL games. I'm not interested in going to football games. I don't really care. And actually, I understand that some of the guys who were taking a knee were making this protest. I think it's inappropriate. And actually, it says it's inappropriate in their own rules. They ought to keep their own rules. I think if, you know, the football player wants to talk about what he thinks is wrong with society, he has every right to do it, but not when he's getting paid on the field. It's not supposed to be a political statement. But, you know, if he thinks it, the reality is America is basically a white nation. I mean, most of the people are white. At least it's been that way. It may change eventually the way they're going. And I don't really care if it changes. I don't have any problem with it changing. But the reality is, for a white nation, you'll find less racism less bigotry in America than you will in probably any other white nation there is. Because there's reverse bigotry, too. You know, where you make allowances for somebody because they're of color. You know, you would arrest him if he was white, but because he's colored, you make allowances because he comes from another culture. Well, that's ridiculous. If it's a crime in your country, it's a crime for the blacks and for the whites and for the browns and for the greens and for the purples. It's a crime, period. So that's reverse racism, but that's still racism, and there will be a backlash from that. If you see how the ebb and flow, we talked about that in Kingdom Economy, there's ebb and flow in societies. You become real tolerant, and then you become real intolerant. And you become very violent, and then you become very pacifist. You know, and so these things happen. They're fluctuations in society. And it's the same way where you get people who have the real big high will have the real big low. You don't want to be that. You want to be steady. You want to be virtuous. You want to be constant. That's a virtue in itself. But anyway, so self-importance, exaggerated sense of self-importance, expecting to be recognized as superior even without achievement that would warrant such respect, exaggerating your achievements and talents, being preoccupied with fantasies about success, power, brilliance, beauty, or the perfect mate. And so you have all these fantasies, you know, and everybody will be tempted to have those things. You know, when I was growing up, I have vivid imagination. I probably had such fantasies as I was growing up. And now you have to remember these symptoms can be extreme or they can be minor. But, you know, you can have a quarter inch sliver in your hand, or you could have a 6-inch sliver in your hand. Well, obviously you don't want a 6-inch sliver in your hand, but you don't really want a 1/4-inch sliver in your hand either. So when I talk about these, exaggerating your achievements and talents, that's bearing false witness. Don't want to do that. Being preoccupied with fantasies, you're thinking like, oh, if I only had this, I could do this and this and this and this. You know, if we had more money, we could do all kinds of things. I'm supposed to pick up some wheelchairs and walkers to help people with. But I don't have any facilities to use them in. But we will store them, and if people need them, we will loan them out to local inhabitants. We needed crutches here, and somebody loaned us some crutches. I mean, we had some crutches, but we needed a little bit different size, and there were different makes. And so we want to have as many of these things as available, and we will take the time to store them so that we can help other people, because that's the cure for narcissism. And so, yeah, if we had more resources, we could do more with what we have. But we don't, because we can't go out and put in a government grant and tell somebody to go to our neighbor's house and force them to contribute. They have to choose to do it. And until they do, we will do the best of what we got with what we've got. Okay, 5, believing that you are superior and can only be understood by or associate with equally special people. I can't imagine that, but I do actually see that in some people. They think that they're special and people have to, these people are beneath me. Of course, that's a little bit what racism is about, but we did a whole show on this whole classism, where you have a class society. I mean, like, this is very common with people in the media, stars in the media. Everybody just falling all over themselves to please this guy or that gal or whatever. And they think that they're special and they're wonderful and they're all this stuff, because everybody says how wonderful they are. Oh, I loved you in this. I thought you were great. Oh, he's so handsome. Oh, she's so beautiful. And so they only want to mingle with other stars. Now, there are actually some pretty big stars. They'll go out and sit on a bench and share their lunch with just somebody there who doesn't even recognize who they are, who give their seat to a lady on public transportation. They're wealthy, millionaires, famous stars. And they do this kind of stuff. And that's the sign that he's not a narcissist. So anyway, so what are you doing for the little guy? And not just writing a check, but actually getting down there and getting your hands dirty. Change any bedpans lately? Help anybody else? I tell you, this is a cure for most of the depression that everybody's suffering from, is to start serving others, taking care of others. I mean, we farm our kids out to public education. We need to start taking care of others and taking care of our own family and helping other people homeschool their kids. So you don't want to believe that you're superior to anybody. You want to be like Christ, be willing to wash the feet of others, which is the lowest job in the household. Requiring constant admiration. You want to be up on a pedestal. You want people to look up to you. You're easily embarrassed when something embarrassing happens, or what you think is embarrassing. Again, number seven is having a sense of entitlement, in which we have a whole society that thinks that, I should have, guaranteed income. On our human rights page, we have a little picture there. It talks about everybody should have a right to enough resources that they may live comfortably and with dignity. Well, I think that everybody has a right to have those resources, but they don't have a right to have them by taking away from somebody else. That's called stealing or coveting. You don't want to do that, because that will destroy your society. That is foolishness. But that seems to be okay in a lot of the people in society today. So number eight is expecting special favors and unquestioning compliance with your expectations. And you'll see this a lot of times with customers who come into hotels and motels. They think the room needs to be this and this, and you need to have this and this and this. And, again, the reason I'm mentioning these things is, do you have these things a little bit? Do you have the slivers of narcissism creeping into your flesh? Because that can get infected and it can get bad. So you need to be more tolerant, need to be more accepting. I've dealt with people in motels that really were doing a bad job, and it was everything I could do to keep from blowing my top. But that's a good sign to see that and learn to have patience with it. And it's amazing what power you have when you do speak up, if you don't speak up from anger, if you don't speak up from this self-righteous approach. You just say, you could have said that more clearly if you tried, and he could have understood you. I saw no attempt for you to change the way in which you were speaking to him. And you were clearly, I could barely understand you, and I'm in the room. He has to hear you on the phone and make out what the message is, and you're not making it clear. And even now when I describe it, I can feel myself a little bit tempted to become impatient with him. But really, the more you get to walk in love, the easier this becomes. The harder it becomes, the more you are infected with narcissism, with self-importance, with selfishness, and you want to overcome that. Having the inability or unwillingness to recognize the needs and feelings of others. You have to be a little empathetic towards other people. You have to understand that they may not have had the opportunities you have. They may not see things quite. And I see this. I understand that people have lied to you and deceived you, and it's a strong delusion that has got you to believe the lie. And that's why I go to such great, spend thousands of hours trying to put this together so that you can see the kingdom of God and his righteousness, because it will set you free. But you have to work at it. And you have to work at removing, setting down those things that are blocking your ability to understand and see the truth, so that you aren't a part of the whirlwind of the collective unconsciousness. Being envious of others and believing others envy you. In other words, the rich. You're envious of the rich. Don't be envious of the rich. The rich have every right to be rich. If they're becoming rich by immorality, that's another thing. But do not make them an enemy simply because they have money and you don't. That's narcissism again. That's moving away from the kingdom of God. Behaving as an arrogant and haughty manner. You don't want that. You want to be cured of that. So it says, although some features of narcissism, it's telling you, personality disorder may seem like having confidence, it's not the same. Narcissist personality disorder crosses the border of healthy confidence into thinking so highly of yourself that you put yourself on a pedestal and value yourself more than you value others. And you can do this by valuing your ideas more than the value of others' ideas or beliefs or study or work, so that you will say, I won't even look at what you've produced because I know I have already produced the perfect solution. That just reeks of narcissism. And you don't want that. You want to always be willing to look and ponder what other people have to offer. And that's what we offer at preparingyou.com and at hisholychurch.org. And some people say, oh, your website is so confusing. It's because you're looking for certain things. I once thought I had mashed potatoes on my plate, and what I had was overcooked cauliflower. It wasn't mashed potatoes. And when I bit into it, I thought, these are the worst mashed potatoes I have ever tasted. I thought there was something wrong with these. But it wasn't mashed potatoes. It was cauliflower. Mushy cauliflower. It didn't actually taste so bad once I had accepted the fact that it was supposed to taste like cauliflower. But when I thought it was supposed to taste like mashed potatoes, yeah, there was something definitely wrong. So, again, we're not what you might expect. So don't come to us looking for what you expect to see. Come to us with an adventurous heart and look. Now, on every web page at the top of His Holy Church, and even at the bottom, you can click on the little guy peering out, and a search engine should show up. And you can search words, you can search phrases, just like you do on Google, and it will search the whole website, and will show you every place that phrase, or and you can read the articles, or maybe it'll be audios, or maybe it will be. And we have a similar thing on Preparing You. There's a search engine up there. You can search words or phrases, and it will show you if there's an article with that title. It will show you if that word ends up in a couple of different articles, and it will show you, and you have a choice to go read those. And so, and we also have the network. Join the network. We have people that will help you through these, explain and answer questions. So all this is available, but it's not going to necessarily be what you think it should be. But we are sharing with you what we've discovered, what God has shared with us, and we freely share it with you. All you have to do is come and take a look. Until then, may His peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.